Welcome. You are listening to the Audio Information Network of Colorado. This recording is intended to be used solely by individuals with barriers to print.
Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio. My name is Keith, amateur radio operator W0NX. This week we continue with articles from the December 2023 The Spectrum Monitor, and we'll begin by finishing the remainder of Vintage Radio's Social Legacy by Chrissy Brand. The podcasts comprise an episode or two of the antics of Canada's favorite fictional family, Dave, Morley, and the kids, narrated by the late Stuart McLean, and recorded live in concert. However, backstage at the Vinyl Cafe is no more than merely a rerun of old shows. For the first time, longtime producer Jess Milton shares rare behind-the-scenes stories from her 15 years touring with the show. The podcast has quickly built a loyal following, and it is all rather lovely, celebrating the legacy of Stuart, and hopefully even introducing new audiences to his body of work. In true 1990s style, a new CD has been released. Merry Christmas, Dave, is a bundle of never-before-released Vinyl Cafe Christmas stories. Put it on my Christmas list, please. But regardless of the CD, there is so much content to be enjoyed in the podcasts themselves. VinylCafe.com. BBC Light Entertainment. For me, the above illustrates the positive power that light entertainment can have on people's well-being. BBC 4 Extra is an archive station that can be heard on DAB in the UK and online. Its origins go back to the start of the century, when the burgeoning UK DAB industry enticed radio stations to begin DAB transmissions. As well as stations that were already on FM, new stations were created by the BBC and commercial broadcasters as a sweetener to persuade the public to purchase the then-new form of radio. The improved choice of stations and program content has been a success, with ever-increasing numbers of DAB multiplexes, along with some small-scale multiplexes to encourage community radio. However, I shall return to that topic in a future issue. The BBC DAB archive station started in 2002 and was named BBC 7 and then BBC Radio 7, rebranding to BBC 4 Extra in 2011. This was more in keeping with its role as sister station to BBC 4. The most recent Radio Joint Audience Research, RAJAR, figures, September 2023, show that BBC 4 Extra broadcasts to a weekly audience of 1.4 million, with a listening share of 1.1%. Comedy, drama, features, and panel games make up the program content, sometimes going back as far as the 1940s, sometimes as recently as the previous week, airing a repeat of a current BBC Radio 4 show. One of the first casualties of the creation of BBC 7 was the BBC's international audience. BBC World Service lost its airings of comedy and other light entertainment offerings. The argument was that such program content should all be on BBC Radio 4 and BBC Radio 7, which unfortunately led to many BBC World Service listeners being cast adrift and unable to hear any of it. It was another error from the BBC World Service bosses, who surely should have given audiences a few hours a week of laughter amidst all the doom and gloom of UK and international news. Brain of Britain. There are many programs in the BBC archives that I could tell you about. I shall stick, this time, to a current favorite, which gives me a feel-good glow, and is quintessentially British in so many ways. The long-running Brain of Britain. It started off back in 1953 as part of a program called What Do You Know? The format is simple yet effective. Contestants are asked general knowledge questions until they get one wrong, with a maximum of 5 questions per contestant per round. If all 5 are answered correctly, then a bonus point is awarded. For some light relief, halfway through, the quartet of contestants combine to try and answer two questions submitted by a listener in a feature called Beat the Brains. If they fail, the lucky listener wins a prize of a book token. The 2023 series of Brain of Britain takes place in the show's 70th anniversary year. There were 48 contestants who have battled it out across 12 heats, and at the time of writing, the four semifinals are underway. I am incredibly excited, in a typically rather reserved British way, of course. I grew up listening to this show, which was then hosted by Quizmaster Robert Robinson, who also hosted 1970s BBC TV quiz Ask the Family, which was also a favorite in my household. Robinson's jovial yet formal approach alluded to the mystique of Brain of Britain. Politely referring to contestants using their honorific and surname, he also had a way with words and of being kind when contestants answered incorrectly or fumbled for a wild guess. For instance, "No, Mrs. Carruthers, not that. Would that it were. Would that it were." You can find some past shows on YouTube and at Andy Walmsley's excellent Random Radio Jottings blog and social media channels. Andy is a Brit now, living in France, and his knowledge of vintage British radio is legendary. He publishes photos, magazine clippings, and audio extracts along with his research. The blog is an exceptional treasure trove of the UK's commercial radio scene of the past 50 years or so. Andy's dives into BBC history inevitably often go back much further than that. His website is Andy Walmsley, that's AndyWalmsley, .blogspot.com. I had always wanted to see Brain of Britain being recorded. Sadly, I didn't get to see it during the Robert Robinson era, but was delighted back in 2013 when I got tickets to see two episodes of the quiz recorded at Media City in Salford. Smooth-toned and silver-haired quizmaster Russell Davies, who remains in that role today, sat with an adjudicator on his right. The scorer sat on his left, and the four contestants opposite. My only gripe was that out of eight contestants over the two shows that I saw, only one was female and all were white. This hardly reflected the true demographic makeup of Britain's brains, although there have been some small improvements to this failing over the past decade. Wooferton and Taiwan. There was a special broadcast to mark the Wooferton Transmitter Site's 80th anniversary, which took place in October. This site is based in the English countryside near the Anglo-Welsh border. The broadcast can be heard online at Mixcloud and at the site owner's website, Encompass. The website is Encompass, Encompass, /historic-radio-site-celebrates-80-years. In October 2017, I was one of about a dozen members of the British DX Club who went on a tour of Wooferton. The Wooferton transmitting station is owned and operated by Encompass Digital Media as one of the BBC's assets, which were handed over as part of the privatization of World Service Distribution and Transmission in 1997. It is the last remaining UK shortwave broadcasting site, located at Wooferton, south of Ludlow, Shropshire, England. The large site spreads across into neighboring Herefordshire. Finally, congratulations to Radio Taiwan International, part of a broadcasting network which is celebrating its 95th anniversary. I listened to their English service online due to lack of shortwave options. Representatives of the station were in London in November for the Association of International Broadcasters 2023 AIB competition as the event partner. This is a renowned and respected 19th annual international competition for journalism and factual productions across TV, radio, and digital platforms. Check out Radio Taiwan International and the AIB websites for more information. And now the world of shortwave listening by Rob Wagner, VK3BVW. Rob, VK3BVW at gmail.com. Anniversaries, Indonesia, Myanmar, Vanuatu, and B-23 changes. Sure, birthdays come around every year, but some birthdays seem more significant than others, especially those with a zero on the end. In many countries, public radio broadcasts started during the 1920s. For example, in the U.S., it is reported that the first scheduled commercial radio broadcast was made on November 2, 1920, under the call sign KDKA in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. In Australia, the first radio license was granted in 1921 to station 2CM, broadcasting from the Wentworth Hotel in Sydney. So, as we continue through the 2020s, we can expect to see a number of broadcasters celebrating centennial milestones. In September, Radio Taiwan International, RTI, celebrated its 95th anniversary. The station was an early adopter of the shortwave medium, with broadcasts to Asia, Europe, and North America. Today, the shortwave service utilizes transmitter sites in Taiwan, Bulgaria, and the U.S. to provide broadcasts in 15 languages. RTI is one of the few international broadcasters that still mail out paper QSLs for accurate and detailed reception reports. Then, in October, a fascinating special program was broadcast in honor of the 80th anniversary of the BBC's Wolferton transmitter, the last remaining international shortwave site in England. Transmissions began from Wolferton, located on the Shropshire-Herefordshire border, on October 17, 1943, with six 50-kilowatt RCA senders. During the 1950s Cold War period, 250-kilowatt Marconi transmitters carried VOA broadcasts beamed to the Eastern Bloc countries, and later joined by Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty programming. These days, as well as BBC broadcasts, the station relays programming for VOA, Radio Farda, KBS World Radio, Radio Northern Europe International, Reach Beyond, Radio Nadarasan International, FIBA Radio Sama, IBRA Radio, and Yoruba National Radio. The site is also DRM capable, where a few broadcasts can be found beamed to Europe. Also in October, a station with a shorter history than the above, but with a higher degree of exoticness and coolness, celebrated its 44th anniversary. LRA 36 Radio Nacional Archangel San Gabriel is the shortwave station from the Esperanza base in Argentine Antarctica. The first broadcast occurred on October 20, 1979, on 6,030 kHz, featuring music, news from Esperanza, and the other five bases in the Argentine Antarctic Territory, and local weather reports. However, for more than 40 years, LRA 36 has operated intermittently on or around 15,476 kHz, with approximately 1 kilowatt. It has always been a challenging DX station due to the low power and remote location. Some DXers have been able to log the station from their listening posts, while others have managed to monitor the broadcasts in recent years via remote web SDRs in Argentina and Brazil. However, the big news is that a new 10-kilowatt transmitter has arrived at the base and should be in operation by the time the station reaches its 45th anniversary next year. It will be interesting to see if antenna modifications are required to handle the much higher power output. With any luck, LRA-36 may well be heard by many more global DXers without resorting to remote SDRs. Myanmar broadcasting scene. Shortwave still makes up an essential part of the media landscape in Myanmar. However, confusion can sometimes arise when discussing the range of services operating in the country and broadcasts targeted directly to the Myanmar people by external stations. The following information may be helpful. There are two national or government-operated networks, plus one station under the control of the country's military. The first is the Myanmar Radio National Service on 5,985 and 9,730 kHz in Burmese with transmitters in Yangon, the country's former capital until 2006. The second is Myanmar Radio's Minorities Service on 5,915 kHz, which can be heard in Karen, Shan, Mon, and other local languages. The transmitter site for the Minorities Service is in Myanmar's capital and third largest city, about 320 kilometers north of Yangon. The national stations generally provide a reliable service. Thaisin Radio's main service on 6,030, 6,165, and 9,460 kHz is mainly Burmese, but English can occasionally be heard. Thaisin Radio also offers a minorities service on 6,165, 7,345, and 9,590 kHz in local languages. The transmitter site is located in the town of Pienuluin in the Mandalay region of the country, about 580 kilometers north of Yangon. The schedule for Thaisin Radio can be irregular and often suffers co-channel interference from more powerful broadcasters. There are extensive services beamed to Myanmar by external broadcasters, including VOA, BBC, Radio Free Asia, CRI, Radio Japan, Reach Beyond Australia, AWR, FEBC, and Akashvani, formerly All India Radio. Some have religious outreach programs, while others deliver news and commentaries to a politically volatile and isolated country. But the more interesting external stations are the so-called opposition, or clandestine broadcasters, set up to target listeners in Myanmar. There are three of these. Mitsima Radio, 21,710 kHz at 1200 to 1300 UTC. Radio NUG, 17,790 kHz at 0200 to 0230 UTC. And 11,940 at 1400 to 1430 UTC. Burma News International, BNI. In A23, the schedule was 13,710 kHz at 0100 to 0130, 17,730 at 1100 to 1130, and 21,710 at 1300 to 1400 UTC. However, at the time of this writing, it is unclear if BNI will use shortwave for the B23 season. Vanuatu. Radio Vanuatu suddenly appeared unannounced in early October on 9,960 kHz between 0100 and 0700. This new frequency should be well heard during their local daylight hours throughout the archipelago of more than 80 islands. The station has registered this new frequency with the HFCC for the B23 season, which began on October 29th. There are now five frequencies where you may find the station broadcasting: 2,485, 3,945, 5,040, 7,260, and 9,960 kilohertz. However, only 3,945 and 7,260 have been regularly heard in recent months before the new frequency was added. Ron Howard, California, USA, reported receiving an EQSL from Radio Vanuatu. He sent a reception report with an audio file to Robert Warren, the senior technical officer at VBTC. The QSL arrived within 2 hours. The address Ron used was Robert W. at VBTC.VU. Indonesia. The Radio Republik Indonesia station at Nabir is one of the few remaining RRI regional stations on shortwave. Nabir is a town in the Indonesian province of Central Papua at the western end of New Guinea. RRI Nabir's schedule tends to be irregular and erratic. However, the signal has recently arrived at MyQTH in southeastern Australia at a reasonable strength by 0900 UTC. But it can also be heard with a weak signal as early as 0750 UTC. Sign-off times are also highly variable. The station features easy-listening Indonesian pop music. By 0900, Islamic prayers are broadcast before the broadcast concludes. Although registered for operation on 7,290 kHz, RRI Nabir is habitually on the low side at 7,289.93 kHz. The output power is listed as only 1 kilowatt. The station is also regularly heard in the U.S., especially along the West Coast. North American listeners should try for this exotic DX catch during the winter DX season. New B-23 transmission period begins. Reception conditions between the summer and winter months vary markedly on the shortwave bands. Throughout the year, international broadcasters usually find it necessary to alter their frequencies and times for the best reception at the listener's location. There are two seasonal changeovers. The A transmission period coincides with the Northern Hemisphere summer, March to October, and the B transmission schedule for the winter period, October to March. The following broadcasters have issued updates for some English transmissions from October 29, 2023 through March 30, 2024. All times are UTC, all frequencies are in kilohertz, and frequencies can be subject to change without notice. Alaska. World Christian Broadcasting's KNLS station at Anchor Point is uniquely located to send strong signals in English to East Asia through its 100 kilowatt transmitters. In B23, expect to find them at the following times and frequencies: 0800 to 0900 on 6075, 1000 to 1100 on 9680, 1200 to 1300 on 9580, and 9625, 1400 to 1500 on 6110. Australia. The only international broadcaster left in Australia is Reach Beyond, formerly Reach Beyond Australia, and before that, known as HCJB Australia. Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio. My name is Keith.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aincolorado.org or by calling 303-786-7777.